This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. The first of 1,500 troops deployed by the Pentagon are soon heading to the southern border. It follows President Trump's executive orders on immigration, including declaring a national emergency. The military's role is to support state and federal agencies, but could also add to tensions in border communities. ABC's Maria Villarreal is in El Paso.
The biggest concern here on the ground in these border communities is the optics of this. If we see military troops coming to our border, is this more of showing a sign of strength, you know, showing what the unapologetic message is from the Trump administration, or is this actually resolving a problem?
Pete Hegseth's confirmation to become the defense secretary, clearing another hurdle. The Senate passed a vote to advance his nomination. A full vote is tomorrow. The Senate confirmed John Ratcliffe as Trump's CIA director today. Trucks continuing to roll into Gaza, bringing much-needed aid for displaced Palestinians. This is ABC News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
For AM 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Kuska.
It was a busy Wednesday in La Crosse City Government as three committees met. The Economic and Community Development Commission was introduced to a pair of TIF applicants, took action on three property purchases, and worked on amending a loan with property developers that was originally issued in 1998. The City Administrator Workgroup met as the city continued its work towards adding that position, and the Police and Fire Commission gave personnel updates. The Redevelopment Authority meets today.
Last night, Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers gave his State of the State address. With more, here's Civic Media's Lisa Hale.
In his seventh State of the State address, Governor Tony Evers declared 2025 to be the year of the kid. He outlined several policies, programs, and initiatives to make kids smarter, healthier, and safer. One of the ways he proposed doing so is with gun reform, to include background checks for all firearm purchases, instituting red flag laws, and restoring the 48-hour waiting period to purchase firearms. In addition to gun reform, Evers called for free breakfast and lunch for all school children, and increased funding to mitigate the child care shortage in the state. He also proposed to invest $300 million to provide comprehensive mental health services in schools. The Republican response to the speech was delivered by Assembly Speaker Robin Voss.
We have the largest one-time surplus in state history, and instead of talking about how to return that money to working families tonight, Governor Evers prioritized adding more spending and growing the size of government.
As Evers wrapped up his speech, he addressed national issues such as immigration, reproductive rights, and LGBTQ protections. He said he would veto any bill that makes Wisconsin less safe, less inclusive, or less welcoming. For Civic Media News, I'm Lisa Hale.
Evers will speak again to the state legislature on February 18th to present his biennial budget.
I'm Jimmy Kuska for AM 1490 WLCX and lacrosseeagle.com.
Bucks basketball tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks headed back to Milwaukee today after nearly a foot of snow around New Orleans shut down the roads and the airport. Last night's game against the Pelicans called off due to the weather. It'll be rescheduled later this season. Tonight, the Bucks host the Miami Heat with 41 games left on the schedule. Milwaukee the half point of the regular season, 13 games before the All-Star break. Damian Lillard on holding onto that fourth place spot in the Eastern Conference.
In this closing stretch, we got to have that more than anything else because it's going to come down to where our mind is. If we do, you know, I think we'll go into the break feeling good about ourselves, and I think right now we're trending in that direction.
College basketball, UWM last night with a 95-79 victory over Wright State in Fairborn, Ohio. Milwaukee now tied for second place in the Horizon League, two games behind Cleveland State. And former Packers defensive back Terrell Buckley named the new head coach at Mississippi Valley State. Buckley played for seven different teams in the NFL after being a first-round pick for Green Bay in 1992. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
We are going to put a little pause on that warm-up that started yesterday. Today, sunshine, cooler, 12 our high this afternoon. Tonight, down to 2 below, but we will get back to 23 tomorrow, 32 our high by Saturday. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 15.
This message is sponsored by WISCaregiver.com. Now is the time to start a meaningful career as a caregiver. Make a real difference in people's lives. WISCaregiver.com gives you two great options for free. Train for the in-demand caregiver workforce as a CDCP, Certified Direct Care Professional, or become a CNA, Certified Nurse Aide. All training is free. Plus, you can earn a $500 bonus. Learn more. Visit WISCaregiver.com.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Mike Siegel. Hey, Mike.
When I look back on all those years on the road and going on two-lane highways in northern Wisconsin, in the dead of winter, it could have been like 10 below outside. One deer jumps out in front of me. I was like, I'm done here.
You're in a ditch and they're not going to find you for 3 days. Dead deer carcass over there and a dead comedian carcass.
Holding his date book.
Somebody might want to call and cancel him at Zany's next week in Chicago.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Dan Schaefer will be here from the recombobulation area. Elon Musk all concerned about Wisconsin Supreme Court. What does that mean? We'll talk about it. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air. Weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, Lacrosse's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome, if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. We're entering hour two of the Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Listen, if you've been looking for a way to contribute and help the folks that have been harmed by the wildfires in Southern California, Civic Media's got you covered. If you have the inclination and the means and you'd like to contribute, Civic Media has a link on our website to the Convoy of Hope, a nonprofit helping to provide immediate relief to those in need. You can just head on over to the Civic Media website at civicmedia.us, click on the banner for more information, and donate there. Right now, we want to address another urgent issue that has come into sharp relief since Donald Trump took office on Monday. And I've got a great guest to help explain it all to me and to you, make us all a little smarter. His name is Pat Sobkowski. Pat is an assistant adjunct professor in the political science department, also a lawyer at Marquette University. Welcome to the show, Pat. Thanks for making time.
Thanks for having me, Maggie. I'm happy to spend some time with you and your audience today and see what we can clear up, if anything.
Yeah, let's do it. So what we're talking about with Pat today, everybody, is Trump's executive order that purports to do away with birthright citizenship. So let's start at the beginning, Pat. What is birthright citizenship?
So birthright citizenship comes from Section 1 of the 14th Amendment. In fact, it's the first sentence of the first section of the 14th Amendment. And what it says, pretty, I think, straightforwardly, is that all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. That's, I think, pretty self-explanatory just based on a reading of the text of the 14th Amendment.
That's so important because it is so straightforward. And what is equally important is where it comes from. Where did the 14th Amendment come from? Why was Section 1 establishing birthright citizenship needed? What was its original purpose?
Yeah, well, of course, the 14th Amendment is ratified in 1868, and it's the product of really sort of the culmination of the first, 80 or so years of the American Republic. But it comes primarily out of the Civil War, right? And preceding the Civil War, there's an infamous case decided by the U.S. Supreme Court called Dred Scott versus Sanford. And in that case, among other things, the Supreme Court, through Roger Taney, who is the Chief Justice at that time, said that African-Americans were not citizens of the United States, and in fact, that they could never be citizens of the United States because it wasn't intended for them to be able to obtain citizenship by the framers of the Constitution, because at that time, of course, many members of the African American community were enslaved, and slaves were not seen under the law as persons; they were seen as personal property of their owners.
Yeah, not to put too fine a point on it, but it was required to start to undo the very direct harm to the people whose labor built the United States from day one and created the economy and the power within the United States for us to fight the Revolutionary War, right? For us to grow and develop and become, in part, the country that we are today. And so that's, again, every time we talk about, and Donald Trump throws around nonsense about birthright citizenship, it does us all, I think, a world of good to remember why it was created in the first place. So let's turn now, Pat, if you will, to Donald Trump's purported, I don't even know what you would call it, nullification of the 14th Amendment by his executive order. Start with the basics. Can an executive order undo a portion of the Constitution?
No, it cannot. That's very clear, at least to me. The president cannot contravene any provision of the Constitution, much less something that's so fundamental as birthright citizenship, by simply signing an executive order. We have a very definite set out process for undoing or constitutional amendments or amending the Constitution. That's in Article 5 of the Constitution. You can go and read it if you have access to a computer.
Right? Like, look it up. So why would Donald Trump do this? Like, if he can't if he can't actually just be like, oh, by executive order, I just rub out Section 1 of Article 14 of our Constitution. If that doesn't have any legal meaning, what's the point?
So that's a really good question, and there are a number of answers I think you could arrive at. One is this is just sort of a symbolic measure taken by Trump. We know this about executive orders anyway. A lot of executive orders are symbolic in nature, right? They have limited reach. There are limited things that executive orders can achieve. And so one way to look at this is it's just Trump maybe appealing to his base and trying to, quote unquote, deliver on a campaign promise, right? Or at least some of the rhetoric he's engaged in up until this point. The other way you could think about it, and maybe it's of a piece of what I just talked about, is it's a way to get a conversation going. I just saw about an hour before I joined the show that a Republican member of the House of Representatives introduced a bill called the Birthright Citizenship Act. And that bill simply seeks to codify Trump's executive order into law. It would be a statute.
But a statute can't trump the Constitution either.
No, of course it can't. But if Congress were to pass this law and President Trump signs it into law, that would, in theory, make it a little bit more difficult to, when it comes to something like judicial review, to have that statute struck down than maybe just an executive order. And it also would show, at least in theory, that Congress is on board with what Trump is trying to do here. So that's the second way maybe we could look at this, is it's Trump trying to get a conversation started among Congress.
I'm going to call that a very generous and kind reading of his executive order, Patrick. One of the things that I think is more challenging about it is that perhaps it's about conversation, but I think more pointedly, when seen in totality with other moves that Trump has made this week, and I'm going to talk about the directive from the Department of Justice to local law enforcement and the threat of criminal prosecution of law enforcement if they don't violate the 10th Amendment and help ICE execute federal law, which technically state and local governments aren't ever supposed to do, that given the meta context here, that it is actually intended to create to create an atmosphere of fear and uncertainty for people that are living here. I've fielded questions on the show and from friends privately that are like, hey, my parents were immigrants and I was born here. Is my citizenship going away? Pat, let's just address that very practical question. If you were born here and you are a citizen, Donald Trump's executive order cannot strip anyone of their citizenship. Am I correct in saying that?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. Federal law sets out a very relatively, let's say, limited number of circumstances where somebody can be denaturalized. One of those, for example, is if you leave the United States and you go and enlist in a foreign country's military.
Right.
That sets up some circumstances where you can be denaturalized and then subject to deportation, but the president cannot just simply sign an executive order and strip people who already have it of their citizenship.
Okay, so folks out there, please breathe easy. That isn't happening. Also, I'm reading some breaking news right now. A federal judge in the District of Oregon, a Seattle-based judge, a Reagan-appointed judge, has just issued a temporary restraining order blocking Donald Trump's executive order on this, calling it, quote, blatantly unconstitutional. Sounds like you concur with the federal judge out of Oregon, Patrick.
Yes. I mean, we're going to see legal arguments develop as these cases make their way through the federal courts. I think it's 22 states have filed lawsuits against the federal government challenging this executive order on constitutional grounds. We're going to see legal arguments develop. And so not that I would be persuaded again or to agreeing with Trump and his lawyer's position on this, but we'll see how these legal arguments develop. But right now, I have not seen a good or even relatively plausible legal argument in favor of this attempt to end birthright citizenship.
Folks, that's Pat Sobkowski. He is an assistant adjunct professor in the political science department at Marquette University, helping us understand the ridiculousness of Donald Trump's executive order, trying to, you know, wipe away a portion of our Constitution. Pat, if you can't answer this, I'm going to ask you to. If you can't, I get it. A lot of what I have been reading in both the executive orders, again, this DOJ directive, other directives that have been going out to executive branch agency department heads, are what I would call generously real thin on the law, not filled with rigorous legal analysis. Is that something people should be keeping an eye on? And we got about a minute left.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we can have a conversation about the state of the federal courts in 2025 and whether, you know, particularly the U.S. Supreme Court is in fact operating on law and not simply politics. But at the end of the day, you need to be able to present something that looks like a legal argument in order to win in court. And I have not seen anything that even resembles legal argumentation on the part of Trump or his lawyers yet. Again, maybe we'll see something like that, but as of right now, I have not seen anything.
Yeah, it's pretty vacuous. A generic appeal to Article I executive branch authority doesn't really get it done when you actually have to make an argument. Pat Sobkowski, thanks so much for making time to help us all get smarter. Love to have you back sometime. Folks, you've been listening to Pat Sobkowski, an assistant adjunct professor in the political science department at Marquette University. Keep it locked. I'm going to dive into Trump's threats to law enforcement in your neighborhood right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the Talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
Hey, folks, this is Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. We have all stopped at a convenience store for a necessity or two. A bottle of water, a half a gallon of milk, or a bag of pickle-flavored potato chips. I mean, those are necessities in your house too, right? But there is a cost for that kind of convenience, as much as 54% more. Now, when I was in my early 20s, like some of you, I may have done most of my shopping at the 7-Eleven around the corner from my apartment. And boy, oh boy, I wish I had known that shopping regularly at convenience stores instead of supermarkets meant I was paying a lot more for my groceries. A National Institute of Health survey recently found that milk can cost 11 to 14% more at those stores, apples and bananas 10 to 53% more,
and cereal can cost as much as 54% more. So, for your regular food shopping, keep more money in your wallet and head on over to the supermarket. For more tips on saving, text MONEY to 88285. This is Carrie Joy saying take good care.
Carmelo Anthony for The Bail Project.
Bad news, you've been arrested. Good news, you're innocent until proven guilty. If you can pay your bail, good news, you go home to wait your trial. If you can't, sorry, you go to jail to wait. But sure, you still presumed innocent. But since you can't afford bail, you've lost your freedom. That's not right. And that's why The Bail Project helps those who can't afford it while fighting the in-cash bail. Because freedom should be free.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Earl Ingram.
Is there an absolute right and wrong in things and in society?
Sure.
So somebody on the other side is clearly supporting something that is wrong, and I'm supposed to...
Well, it's a two-way street. I think if we all would become open to talk and dialogue, we could get somewhere. The space between you can only be bridged by trying to understand what it is the other person is thinking and why.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, LaCrosse's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Yeah.
I try every day to bring you real news and engage us all in a great conversation about that real news of the day. My thanks to Pat Subkowski, an assistant adjunct professor in the political science department at Marquette University, talking about birthright citizenship. Yeah, that's already been enjoined by a federal judge. Took what, a day? So if you recall, last hour, I ended the hour by explaining to people what performative politics is. And it is very easy to say that Donald Trump is almost all performative politics, meaning the exercise of power or influence in a way that actually causes harm to your key constituencies or gets, you're just out there sort of puffing yourself up and it has no meaning or purpose. Yeah, I would argue the executive order about birthright citizenship is exactly that. Any lawyer would tell you, sir, this will never survive any level of review by any court that operates in good faith. It literally is a 0% chance because presidents can't, you know, wipe away portions of the Constitution that they don't like. That's not the way democracies work. But I got a great question from my friend Todd texting in on the WMDX line. Todd asked me, hey, Maggie, can you talk to me more when you talk about performative politics about the difference between like the theater of politics and the rhetoric of politics and these two definitions of performative politics that you use? I sure can, Billy, and thank you for the question. Reminder, before I get to responding to Todd Billy's question. If you have questions for me and you'd like me to answer them in 90 seconds or less, we're going to do a segment or two like that on Fridays. You're going to definitely want to check that out. If you want to submit a question ahead of time, you can always text it to 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Or you can email me at askmaggie@civicmedia.us. That's askmaggie@civicmedia.us. We're going to do that segment every Friday at 3 p.m. It is Cardi and the Callers Ask Maggie Questions. I only have 90 seconds, so hopefully I'll eventually shut my yap and we can get lots of questions in. So to Todd Billy's question, I do not mean to impugn the rhetoric that is engaged by politicians, you know, not Donald Trump, not the like vile hate speech, but simply the theater of politics. It's not what I'm talking about. All of politics has an element of performance to it. When I say performative politics and I deride it. I criticize it. I'm talking about just those two specific types. Puffery and ego-driven, let me get a headline and the thing I'm doing will have absolutely no meaning, impact, or import. That's definition one. Definition two is, I am going to do something because I can, because I have power and leverage, and it's actually going to either hurt people or get nothing done, but I get to flex. Right? That's what I mean. That is Donald Trump to a T every single day. So I want to turn, I'm going to take a caller, and if you've got questions about this, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. 2 days ago, the Department of Justice sent a memorandum out, and it informed, this was on January 21st, 2 days ago, told all the DOJ offices, all the assistant U.S. all the U.S. attorney offices, hey, we're going to actually start criminally prosecuting your local police officers, your sheriff's department employees, if they do not agree to violate the 10th Amendment and use our dwindling public safety resources to help ICE and the federal government do their job. Now, even if you think we've got an immigration problem, this is not how you go about fixing it. Okay. And I'm going to explain all of this to you. I know a goodly bit about this because I was there in the trenches back in 2017 when Donald Trump tried to pull something similar to this then. Mark from Prairie du Sac, you had a question, sir.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if Brad Schimmel should be asked the question on what his opinion is on Donald Trump's executive order on this and get him on the record for saying whether he supports it or not, because that goes a long way in saying whether his judicial opinion is actually of substance or just performative, you know, performing like a little trained monkey for Donald Trump. And Trump is the organ grinder.
Yeah, my guess is, Mark, thanks for the question, that Schimmel would dodge the question because it's a no-win question, right? When Brad Schimmel, candidate for the Supreme Court, can't even say very clearly that Joe Biden won the 2020 election, he is, by definition, unfit to serve, not just on the state Supreme Court, but my argument would be he's unfit to serve in the position that he holds now as a Waukesha County Circuit Court judge. Shame on you, sir, because effectively it's giving comfort and aid to enemies of the United States, meaning those who sought to overthrow our democracy back in 2021. That's just my hot take. We're going to take care of a little bit of business. We're going to come back and I'm going to dive into this new directive from the Trump administration to the U.S. Department of Justice and all U.S. attorneys' offices, threatening your local police, your local sheriff's department with up to life in prison. I kid you not, life in prison. If they do not agree to violate the 10th Amendment and violate the 4th, 5th, and 6th Amendment rights of residents here in the United States of America, we're going to discuss all of that and much more. We'll take more calls. My name is Maggie Nunn, your friendly lawyer lady, an economist that does a little political commentary every day from 2 to 4 p.m. all across the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, you can tune in southeastern Wisconsin at my radio station that I originate out of 540 AM WAUK or on any of Civic Media's local talk radio network affiliates, as well as on the Civic Media app. You can watch me on YouTube, on Civic Media's YouTube channel, and of course on my X, Instagram, and Facebook accounts at Maggie Nunn Show. Come and join the fun, y'all. The water's warm, even when it's cold outside. I take all comers, all callers, all commentators, including my friendly conservatives. I love chopping it up with you all. When we come back, again, we're going to dive into this new directive from the Trump Department of Justice threatening your local law enforcement agents. Can you imagine locking up your friendly cop that helps keep your neighborhood safe? Come on, man. Keep it locked. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-40.
Eagle, 1490 AM. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Recent rains going through South America, there still seems to be a lot of uncertainty about what they're going to produce. I'm Ben Jarboe at the Midwest Farm Report, And joining me is John Heinberg, a market advisor with Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend. And he's going to explain why there's still uncertainty with that recent rain.
You know, for the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about the dryness in Argentina, southern Brazil. You know, that still stays in the mindset of the market, but we saw some rains move throughout that area over the weekend. But now we're focusing on the harvest side of it. Mato Grosso is one of the number one producing state in Brazil in terms of grains. They have been staying on the wet side. Harvest is delayed. We're seeing some internet pictures out there now of, you know, beans sprouting in pods. But again, remember, those are isolated situations in a massive country. But the big thing is the beans aren't getting to the ports.
Heinberg says with all eyes waiting on that South American soybean harvest, it is just going to be a waiting game to see what the markets are going to do here. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Ben Jarbo, and we'll take a look at the closing markets right after this.
Did you know soybean diseases like white mold and sudden death syndrome can survive in your soil even after rotating crops? Prevention of these diseases is a constant battle, and yield loss from an infection can be devastating. The right management plan makes all the difference. Keep your beans safe this spring with Heads Up Seed Treatment. Heads Up guards your seed from both white mold and SDS. Stay protected and profitable by asking your seed dealer for Heads Up. Learn more at headsupst.com.
Come on along. We're headed to the Canadian Rockies. I'm Pam Yonke, inviting you to join me July 26th through August 4th. We'll begin at Calgary's Living History Museum. Then it's off to Banff for a guided tour. Next, we board a Via Rail train for phenomenal views of the Canadian Rockies. Off to Vancouver for award-winning wines at Lulu Island Winery. Then we ferry to Vancouver Island to visit a bison ranch and a dairy farm. Go to holidayvacations.com, enter keyword PAM to get a brochure or watch a travel show.
Welcome back. I'm Ben Jarbo with the Midwest Farm Report, and now it's time to take a look at what the markets are doing on the close on this Wednesday. It looks like the markets have taken a bit of a turn for the worse, with cash corn down 5 3/4, up 4.84 1/4. And new crop corn down 1/4 at 4.59 1/2. March soybeans are down 11 1/4 at 10.56, and November soybeans are down 3 at 10.46 3/4. March wheat is down 4 3/4 at 5.54, and July wheat is down 3 1/2 at 5.78 1/4. Class 3 milk isn't looking too good, as February contracts are down 46 cents at 18.97 a hundredweight, and March contracts for Class 3 milk are down 32 cents at 18.98 a hundredweight. Barrels of cheese closed down 4 at 181, and 40-pound blocks are down 1/2 at 177 1/2. And butter finished the day down 1 1/4 at 252 1/4. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Ben Jarbo.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
We are going to put a little pause on that warm-up that started yesterday. Today, sunshine, cooler, 12 our high this afternoon. Tonight, down to 2 below, but we will get back to 23 tomorrow, 32 our high by Saturday. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 15.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
What's worse, fast drivers or slow drivers? Karina listening on WAUK in Milwaukee.
Slow drivers are the worst. They think too slow. They stop in the middle of the highway to think about where they're going. Maybe they need to turn left and right. They're changing lines for, oh my God, I can do all day long.
Karina?
Yes.
Can you tell us what you really think?
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Pete Schwaba.
On the next Nightlight, it's our popcorn pick of the week with our friend Greg Vadney from the Roar Museum in Manitowoc. Then documentary filmmaker Kate Stapleton joins me to talk about her film, which premieres at the Door County Film Festival.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Really love Mary J. Blige. That is true. I'll tell you who doesn't have real love for Pete Hegseth. Senator Lisa Murkowski just announcing everybody that after thorough evaluation, I must conclude that I cannot in good conscience support Pete Hegseth's nomination for Secretary of Defense. I did not make this decision lightly. I take my constitutional responsibility to provide advice and consent with the utmost seriousness. Too bad Pete Hegseth isn't a serious nominee for the Secretary of Defense. I'm pretty surprised by this, I have to say, because everybody had looked to Senator Joni Ernst as sort of the canary in the coal mine during his confirmation hearing, and she basically gave him a pass. So remember, the margins in the Senate are razor thin. So whether or not we're going to have an utterly unqualified, couldn't lead a tiny, either of two tiny little nonprofit organizations without driving them into bankruptcy and closure, likely alcoholic, womanizing, wife cheating, impregnating wife three while he was still married to wife two, credibly accused sexual assaulter Pete Hegseth as our next Secretary of Defense, maybe there will be another Republican of good conscience who thinks that our national security interests aren't served by such a nitwit running, you know, the entirety of the 3 million plus people and nearly $1 trillion in budget Defense Department. I don't know. I mean, do you really have to, like, take this responsibility deeply seriously, Senator Murkowski, to come to the conclusion that you should probably vote no on Pete? I don't know. Shouldn't be that hard. Folks, my name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Here is what I want to talk about today. 2 days ago, the Trump Department of Justice sent a directive to all DOJ offices and all U.S. attorneys' offices. In this directive, what the Trump Justice Department, what Donald Trump is saying is that federal prosecutors and federal law enforcement are being mandated to investigate and potentially bring criminal charges against state and local law enforcement officials. You know, your friendly cop that you see at the coffee shop that you know or that you see out on his beat, your sheriff that's helped you when you've gotten a flat tire or run out of gas. Yeah, he's talking about federally investigating and prosecuting the people that you rely on to keep your family safe in your neighborhoods if they don't cooperate with the federal government's mass deportation agenda. Now, I know a lot about this because he's not just trying to do that, or is doing that, and I'm going to detail that for you, but he's also critical federal law enforcement funding grants to state and local law enforcement if they don't help the federal government do its job. Okay? Here is what he's threatened. There's a couple of U.S. code provisions that this involves. Here is what he is threatening your friendly local police officer, your sheriff's department with. Potentially criminal charges under 8 U.S.C. 1324 and 18 U.S.C. Section 371. Under Section 371, you can face up to 5 years in federal prison. It covers conspiracy to commit an offense against or defraud the United States. I'm going to talk to you about like why all of this stuff is stupid and would likely be struck down by a federal judge. But the very idea of threatening your local police officers and your local sheriff's deputies with this kind of nonsense is beyond me. 8 U.S.C. 1324 prohibits the harboring of people who are here illegally. And it describes that. Harboring has a very specific meaning under federal law. And the penalties under that provision are 5 years, 10 years, and up to life in prison. You know, we back the blue, but I'll threaten to put your blue in your neighborhood in prison for life if you don't help me execute my mass deportation plan. That is what Donald Trump has said to local law enforcement. Now, here is the thing. Do you remember this little thing when conservatives were all about, like, states' rights and the federal government cannot usurp the areas of the law that the Constitution reserves to states to decide? Federalism. Federalism meaning those powers not explicitly granted and confined to the federal government are in all cases presumed to be held by states. And in order to give life to that under the 10th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, it means that the federal government cannot take the resources of state and local government for the purposes of enforcing federal law. This makes sense, right? Like, we pay taxes to the federal government. We separately pay taxes in the form of income and property taxes and sales taxes to our state and local governments. If the federal government can effectively seize state and local law enforcement and be like, you are now responsible for enforcing U.S. federal immigration law, it's like stealing your tax dollars. You can't do that. The federal government cannot assume, co-opt, coerce, take over local government for the purposes of executing federal law. Nuh-uh. And not only are they threatening your local law enforcement agents, your cops and sheriffs, with imprisonment, not only is that a violation of the 10th Amendment, here's how it also will affect you as a taxpayer. So he's threatening the safety of your communities by doing this, by draining resources away from your local law enforcement to actually enforce state-based criminal statutes. But here's this. Immigration violations are civil infractions. They're not crimes. They're civil. So what Donald Trump is trying to, he's not only trying to force local law enforcement to do ICE's job for them, to do the job of Homeland Security for them. And I can set aside for the purposes of this discussion the insane costs of trying to actually round up and deport 12 million people from the United States. Is trillions of dollars. Here's the thing. He's also trying to ask law enforcement to detain anyone identified by ICE as potentially here illegally. A couple of things on that as a practical point. If your name is Juan Ramos, there might be a whole bunch of them. Absent biometric data, which not all local jails or police departments collect, how do you know it's the Juan Ramos who overstayed his visa or who came here illegally? You don't. So it's like, one, do we even have the right person? And here's the second thing. What does detainer mean? If ICE wants to come and pick up someone who's already locked up in any county's jail, they can do that. They just show up and be like, give me that person. Especially if the federal charge, if there's a federal criminal charge, not just the civil immigration violation. If the federal criminal charge, if they're a dangerous gang member, MS-13, and there's a bunch of like really serious federal criminal charges, they'll just take the person and deport them. That's always been the case. But that's not what this directive that Trump gave to the DOJ to threaten local law enforcement actually does. It goes beyond that. It doesn't narrow its application to dangerous criminals that are wanted under federal warrants for murder or gang activity, drug trafficking, human. No, it's not limited to that at all. It applies to anyone that's here illegally. So what happens is, let's say someone is picked, who's here illegally, is picked up by local law enforcement for unpaid. Okay? You got a bunch of those. You may get picked up. What happens then? Well, that's a state law or local ordinance violation that triggers a charge. You can be detained. You got a hearing before a judge. They say you got to pay your parking tickets or get on a plan. You're effectively arraigned. And now you should be released. And, you know, it may take, in some crowded jails, read Milwaukee County at times, It might take you a day to get in front of the judge. But now, just because your misdemeanor infraction is this volume of unpaid parking tickets, you should get released. And by the way, the 4th, 5th, and 6th Amendment of the United States promises you that you should be released from custody if there is no longer any valid state law-based reason for you to continue to be locked up. But what President Trump is trying to direct local law enforcement to do is keep that person in effect illegally in violation of their 4th, 5th, and 6th Amendment rights in a local county jail, costing you, the taxpayer, more. And by the way, people that have had this done to them have sued counties and states for the violation of their 4th, 5th, and 6th Amendment rights and have won millions of dollars. Guess who pays that? You do. Yeah. So let's zoom back out. Donald Trump has just threatened local law enforcement with up to lifetime in prison for failing. And this is not about violent criminals. If there's a violent criminal in lockup and they got federal warrants and charges, and local law enforcement will hand those people over. That's not what I'm talking about. But people who are otherwise supposed to be released from your local jails so that they don't cost you the thousands of dollars someone costs on an almost daily basis when you have them in a county jail, if you fail to release them and you keep them in violation of their 4th, 5th, and 6th Amendment rights, Donald Trump is saying you have to do that. And if you, local law enforcement, don't do that, I'm going to criminally prosecute you. He is trying to compel local law enforcement to violate the Constitution. Do you recall Pete Hegseth's confirmation hearing, Pam Bondi's confirmation hearing, where they were asked in many ways, shapes, and forms over and over again, if the president of the United States gives a directive that violates the U.S. Constitution, will you tell him so, and will you refuse to heed that directive? And none of them would answer the question. Here's an example of that. Now, before I go to the phones, because I want to hear from you, 855-75-CIVIC, that's 855-752-4842. I want to read to you the deep legal analysis that Donald Trump's genius squad of lackeys and loyalists at the Department of Justice used to explain their new mandate that local law enforcement violate the 10th, 4th, and 5th, and 6th Amendments. In other words, you know, ignore the Constitution or face potential federal prison time. Here's the deep legal analysis. We could count the words again. I'm going to read it. The Supremacy Clause and other authorities require state and local actors to comply with the executive branch's immigration enforcement initiatives. I kid you not. The Supremacy Clause, which basically means in a space of legislation, if federal law, and it's clearly a federal power, and state law conflicts, the federal law governs. But that doesn't overrule all of the civil rights protections and the 10th Amendment. Yeah, here it is. The Supremacy Clause and other authorities, I'll get to those in a second, require state and local actors to comply with the executive branch's immigration enforcement initiatives. No, it doesn't. Federal law prohibits state and local actors from resisting, obstructing, and otherwise failing to comply with lawful immigration-related commands. Oh, check that word, lawful. They're not. And requests pursuant to, for example, the president's extensive Article 2 authority with respect to foreign affairs and national security, the Immigration and Nationality Act and the Alien Enemies Act of 1798 that was used to intern the Japanese during World War II. Yeah, all that's garbage. That's the extent of the legal analysis, like four lines. Just forget the Constitution. I'm going to take your comments and calls when we come back, and I'm going to give you a little chuckle before the end of the show. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Back with the Maggie Dawn Show in just a moment.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We have updates on important state Supreme Court cases involving the outcome of a November 2024 North Carolina Supreme Court election and whether Pennsylvania can count mail ballots with missing dates. First to North Carolina, where after two recounts, a race for Supreme Court justice is separated by 734 votes, with 5.5 million ballots cast. Supreme Court Justice Allison Riggs was declared the winner over appeals court judge Jefferson Griffin, but Griffin refused to concede and appealed to invalidate as many as 60,000 voters. Griffin's challenge includes voters with felony convictions, despite North Carolina's returning citizen rights restoration. He and the North Carolina GOP also challenge voters with incomplete registration information, some of whom are even elected officials and have voted for years. Wednesday, the Carolina Journal reported that the North Carolina Supreme Court refused to hear the case in a 5-1 decision, sending it back to Wake County Superior Court to consider Judge Griffin's complaints. Back in October, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court refused to rule on whether on-time mail-in ballots missing a signing date could be counted. Of the two challenges filed, the ACLU's argument that rejecting the ballots is a violation of the state constitution's free and equal elections clause will be considered. No trial date has been set. We have more on both cases at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Max Inc. on Civic Media, live in the lair with Kaylin Cole.
Have you ever walked away from a karaoke performance thinking, yeah, that was a lot better than the original person?
Oh my gosh, I don't know if I should admit that or not.
I think you should. Because now we know there's a song.
Jimmy's talking on it now.
I know. Oh, you're going to get me in trouble, Jimmy.
It's live in the lair. Grab the podcast now at MaxIncRadio.com and listen live on Saturday nights, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matt and Air on Air.
Welcome back, everybody. If death comes for me tonight, girl. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. I'm your friendly lawyer lady, economist, and commentator on basically anything that comes across my mind right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm talking about Donald Trump's threat of criminal prosecution and potentially life in prison if local law enforcement officials, like your friendly cop or sheriff's deputy that you know, that you see at the coffee shop or church, the post office, if they refuse to violate the Constitution. And I got one of my favorite conservative texters texted me, illegals don't have constitutional rights. Yeah, they do. The Constitution refers to persons, not citizens, when it establishes fundamental civil rights, like the right to due process, the right to free speech. And the Supreme Court has held that many of these provisions, including Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendment rights, apply to all persons in the United States, regardless of their immigration status. So I beg of you, texter, quit listening to Fox News. Do a little Googling, little research. Takes like 2 seconds. This is all Donald Trump's letter to the Department of Justice to threaten local law enforcement officials with imprisonment if they refuse to violate the Constitution, as the federal government tries to co-opt local law enforcement into doing the federal government's job, is the entire legal analysis wiping away the 10th Amendment, the 4th Amendment, the 5th Amendment, the 6th Amendment, is like 5 lines long. And by the way, I tangled with the Trump Administration 1.0 when I was the general counsel, the chief legal officer for Milwaukee County. They tried to yank federal burn grant JAG funding, which helped fund our district attorney's office, Milwaukee Police Department, to the tune of nearly $7 million a year. They tried to tell me, oh, you're not going to get the money. Yeah. Guess who won that fight? This lady did. They turned over that money because this is all garbage. It's mumbo jumbo, made up nonsense, like the idea that a president can get rid of birthright citizenship with one stroke of a pen. The day Donald Trump took the oath to become president of the United States, he violated that oath the very same day. He knew he didn't believe any of that when he took the oath. Jeff from Whitewater, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. What do you have to say, sir?
Yes,
I don't know where to start, I guess. Have you had these same complaints the whole time under the Biden administration? I mean, like, constitutional rights and this and that, and I hear you saying bring it back to the states. I do remember immigration given back to the states. And then the Biden administration bucked those states.
No, immigration laws have never been enforced by local law enforcement. It's federal law. The federal government has the responsibility to enforce federal immigration law. Period. Full stop.
Oh, but you just said Trump always said give it back to the states.
I'm talking about the fact that conservatives trot out states' rights, and that the federal government shouldn't encroach into the reserved area of state law all the time. That's a conservative talking point. And yet Donald Trump violated that on day one when he executed and has given this directive. He's usurping state and local law enforcement resources. Why does
system.
Say that again?
Two-tier justice system.
Yeah, those for the rich, well-connected, powerful, and people that are friendly to Donald Trump. They get one set of laws that get enforced in one kind of way, and anybody that disagrees with Trump or doesn't have a pile of money or access gets another justice system. I totally agree with you, Jeff. Thanks for calling. Gary, you're up next. What do you have to say, sir?
My nephew was born in Germany. My brother and his wife were living over there for a little while, and he was born. Now, he's not a citizen of Germany. He's a citizen of the United States. I believe that a person who comes in here, even if they're illegal, they have rights. Just like when I was in Germany visiting them, I had rights. People weren't allowed to go out there and beat me up or rob me or anything like that, and the police would go out there and protect me. But you don't have right to vote. You don't have a right to stay there. If they wanted to yank you out and send me back, when I was in Germany, this was years ago, every country that I went to, I had to show my passport.
Yep.
Nowadays, it's opened and everything. So,
well, you still have to show your passport when you enter Europe, but because of the EU, you can move freely within EU member nations without re-showing your passport. Didn't used to be that way. I traveled before the EU was fully integrated.
I'm way older than you.
Yeah, we got limited time. Do you have a punchline or a criticism, Gary?
The punchline is that, yes, illegal people have rights, but they don't have the right to live here if they want to. We have the rights. If you break the law, and this Tom Holman is picking up.
Yeah. So, Gary, I'm not debating the fact that someone that's here illegally can be deported. It's not my point. Right. Again, immigration violations are civil violations and they can lead to deportation. I'm not arguing that point. All right. I promised you all a little chuckle before the end of the show. I got just under 2 minutes left, but I got to give you the chuckle. It's a sad chuckle, but a chuckle nonetheless. Mississippi has introduced a new bill entitled Contraception Begins at Erection. I kid you not. It's the jack-off bill. If passed, it begins July 1st, 2025. It shall be unlawful for a person to discharge genetic material without the intent to fertilize an embryo. Yes, for jacking off the first time, you get a $1,000 fine. Second one is $5,000. Third and subsequent offenses, $10,000. Yikes! Holy cow! Oh, small caveat. If you do this, it doesn't apply if you use contraception, but you have to be having actual intercourse. Can you believe this? This is where the absurdity and stupid has led us to the Contraception Begins at Erection Bill in Mississippi. That's going to do it for me, folks. I'll be back tomorrow. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me, but it's always better when we stand together for the Constitution of these United States of America. Thanks for listening. Dom Salvia is up next, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. A big show on a Friday. Make sure to join us, Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, former Wisconsin Badger Brady Ewing, and Peter Rapine of E-Bombs World. Be here.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Where are you at with dome stadiums?
Oh, love them. Snow games are awesome, but it's also a risk of injuries and everything.
Give me a dome anytime. I don't want to see elite athletes running on snow like it's me playing out there and tripping and slipping. I want to watch those guys run. I want the receivers to run and catch their passes. I want to see great athletes being great athletes.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. Soaring high above lacrosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX Lacrosse. And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. In the Oval Office, President Trump signing a handful of new executive orders, including establishing a working group on digital assets, including cryptocurrency. The president also responded to a federal judge's ruling today, temporarily blocking his executive order to limit birthright citizenship, siding with several states in a lawsuit saying it violates the 14th Amendment.
Obviously, we'll appeal it. They put it before a certain judge in Seattle, I guess, right? And there's no surprises with that judge.
The federal judge was appointed decades ago by Republican President Ronald Reagan. The Senate will take a full vote on Pete Hegseth's nomination tomorrow for defense secretary after a procedural vote passed today. Drug maker Purdue Pharma, along with owners, the Sackler family, agreed to boost their settlement to $7.4 billion in the latest attempt to resolve nationwide opioid litigation. And dangerous cold, snow and ice crippling parts of the South. This is ABC News.